Mreichutto.
Sober as.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On this episode, I have Barbara James. Malitzas. Barbara is Gwasala and Nakwakta from Port Hardy, British Columbia. Barbara is a Red Seal carpenter, as well as an instructor for the British Columbia Institute of Technology. Barbara is also an advocate for Indigenous peoples. She's been sober since 11/18/2018. That's over 4 years. On this episode, Barbara courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Barbara James. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good, good. So here in Alaska, it's like super windy. It's like, I don't know where the wind came, but it's... You know, mostly sunny, so it's not too bad. It's just a lot of wind. How is it in British Columbia?
Summer is here, so it's pretty warm out. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of forest fires right now, so it's pretty smoky.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We know what forest fires are up here, too. We've had, in the past... experience with that, and we know how smoky it can get and the air quality goes down.
Yeah.
Unfortunate, but you know, that's part of living in these the areas we live in, you know.
Yeah, climate change, it's not fun.
Definitely, yeah. So I was mentioning that I found you on social media, and the way I find people to ask to interview is by their posts, and you had posted about being sober or in recovery and being Indigenous. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself so others can get to know you?
Sure. My English name is Barbara James. My ancestral name is Malnitsis. I am Gwasala Nakwakta of Port Hardy, British Columbia. Our original homelands are actually Ba'us, which is Blunden Harbor. I am 36 years old. I'm a Red Seal carpenter and a instructor at the British Columbia Institute of Technology.
Wow. What does a Red Seal carpenter, what does that mean?
So it's a certification. You go through an apprenticeship for carpentry. It's about, I believe, 6,800 hours you need to record of practical training and 4 years of schooling. And once you complete all that and then pass a final exam, you get your Red Seal credential, which means I'm recognized nationally.
You had also put on your description, you're an advocate as well.
Ah, yes. I do a lot of advocacy work. I volunteer my time with many different societies and boards. I'm the vice president of the BC Tradeswomen Society. We're just a nonprofit that tries to give back to the community when it comes to women or people who identify as a woman or non-binary or has experience as a woman in the trades. There's a lot of barriers when you work in a male-dominated industry, so we just try to help in any way that we can with facing those barriers and trying to make things easier in the trades. I'm also a co-chair for Build Together, which is the Women's Committee of the BC Building Trades. We do the exact same thing, but we're a union, so that I cover both sides, non-union and union, of women in trades. I'm also a regional representative for the BC Center for Women in the Trades, which is an organization that provides basically anything you can think of: mentorship, allyship, resources, training, anything you need, we've got it. I'm involved with my union, which is the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, Local 1907. I think I've covered most of the boards I sit on.
Wow, that's a lot of hats you're wearing. Wow, that's amazing. And you, I saw one post that you said you are decolonizing the trades.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
What does that mean?
Well, the trades has a bit of a toxic culture, you could say. There's a lot of like old school cowboy mentality. So in the next coming years, a lot of the boomers are retiring, and we're going to have, like, I don't know, some words of 800,000 jobs within the trades become available. And in order to fill those positions, we need to make the trades environment friendly for everyone, more accepting, more comfortable, more safe. So what I do as an Indigenous Two-Spirit carpenter, I try to show everyone, like, hey, I'm here, I'm a good worker, I'm capable. And I just try to break down all the barriers that I faced within my life in the trades, so that in the coming years, the youth and whoever else enters the trades won't have to face all the BS that is out there.
Wow, you're a trailblazer and making it easier for the future generations. I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Barbara, can you go ahead and let us know your recovery story? What did things look like before? And how did you overcome, and what do things look like now for you?
Okay, so I'll start in the beginning. I was born on Vancouver Island in Nanaimo, British Columbia. I moved to East Vancouver with my mom and my stepdad, and that's growing up in the city. My family has a lot of intergenerational trauma. My grandparents were both in residential school. My mom was picked up in the 60s scoop and grew up in foster care. My sister and myself were picked up in the 90s scoop and grew up in foster care. So there's a long history of trauma, any type of abuse, drugs and alcohol. It's been my family's way of coping. And so about 4.5 years ago, I decided that needs to stop here. So I sobered up. I believe the last night I drank was November 18th of 2018. I went to Whistler for a rap concert to see Andre Nicotina with my ex-boyfriend. And I drove up there, and I had the plan of not drinking so that we could leave afterwards and I could drive home, because this was about an hour and a half away from home. And I was successful for the most part until the end of the night, when my ex bought, like, they're like, oh, bar's closing, come last call. So he went and bought like 8 beers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, we can't waste the beers. Yeah. So I better chug half of these. Yeah, brilliant idea. So we left the bar after the show and got into the truck and probably sat there for like an hour just to be on the safe side. I didn't feel drunk. I didn't even feel buzzed. But I wanted to get him home because he was heavily intoxicated. So I made the poor decision to drive. So as we were leaving the parking lot, right away a cop like jumps out of the bush.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he comes up and he's like, have you had anything to drink tonight? And I was like, I'm just going to be honest. And I was like, yeah, I had a couple. And he's like, well, okay, I'm going to have to breathalyze you. And I was like, uh-oh. Okay. So I step out of the vehicle. He breathalyzes me. And the first result said, it wasn't like a fail. It was something in between.
Mm.
And he was like, okay, well, legally, where you can have a second test and then we can go off of what the second test says. He's like, did you just drink? And I was like, yeah, like it was just in my mouth. He's like, okay, that probably explains why you blew like an in-between. So we waited 10 minutes and then he hit again. And then that one said fail. And I was like, oh, so this is getting worse. yeah. And the laws had just changed. So even if you were a first time offender, which I was, they had the right to immediately take your license and impound your vehicle. And so we talked about it and he was like, listen, like I can tell you're not visibly drunk. And he's like, you haven't hurt anyone. You're able to carry a conversation. You're standing upright. He's like, I'm going to go make a phone call. I'll be right back. So he left. Meanwhile, my anxiety is just like through the roof. And he comes back and he's like, I'm sorry, the law changed like yesterday. Oh. I'm going to have to take your license and tow truck is on its way to take your truck. And I was like, oh, crap. Okay, I'm an hour and a half away from home. I was like, is there like a hostel nearby? Because we don't have money to stay. Whistler is like a fancy resort town. Mm. So hotels are like $200 a night. I was like, I can't afford a hotel. And the cop was like, nope, we don't have hostels. I don't know what to do. He's like, you can hop in the car and I'll drop you off at the cheapest hotel. And I was like, okay. So I get in the back of the police car with my ex and he's cracked a beer and he's drinking in the back of the car.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he hands me a beer while the cop's out. I was like, you know what? I might as well. The shame is already hitting me. I feel like crap. I was like, you know what? Like, go big or go home, right? So I took the beer and the rest of that night was just, we ended up staying at a hotel. And the next morning we had to like leave before we fully paid the full amount of the hotel. Tried to hitchhike home, super hungover, puking on the side of the highway, fighting with my boyfriend at the time. It was ugly. Mm. And just the shame I was carrying, having to tell my parents, like, my truck was in my dad's name because I had gone through a divorce and all that. And so I had to break it to my parents that I had lost my license so that they could try to get the truck out of impound, because the longer it sits in impound, the more expensive it becomes. Mm-hmm. So I waited an entire week to call my dad, and then I called him just crying, and I was like, I felt so crappy and so much shame, and I just hated myself and broke the news to him, and I was like so scared of what he had to say, of his judgment, and all he said was, why didn't you call me that night? I would have come and picked you up. Yeah. And I was like, oh, such a good man. So that was enough for me. Like, a lot had built up to that point, but the shame I carried from that night and losing my license and essentially losing my independence was, I knew I had to change, like, and big time change. I attracted a lot of toxic relationships in my life. And so obviously that relationship I had at the time immediately fell apart because I was sober. He was like very much an alcoholic and those relationships just don't work. So not only was I trying to stay sober, but I was like newly broken up and I was just a mess, like rock bottom. I actually like had a major breakdown in the shower and I didn't know what to do. So I just like prayed because I grew up in a very religious white foster home. I grew up resenting religion for the most part because it was like, I felt like it was force fed. I had a lot of resentment because like I was taken away from my parents, my mom, who's First Nations, and I was just an angry, resentful child. So when it came to religion, I don't know, it was a love-hate relationship. But in that moment of vulnerability in the shower, I just decided to pray and I like surrendered myself in that moment. And it was like, I don't know, I walked out of that shower like a different person. I guess it worked. It definitely worked. I just felt like, I don't know, when I'm hungover, it got to the point where I was like suicidal. I wouldn't attempt suicide, but I would think about it. I would walk to a bridge and I would just be like that close to just ending it, to just not have to feel anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the prayer helped. I came out of the shower. I just surrendered myself. I handed all the weight over to Creator and asked him to just relieve me of the shame and forgive me. And so I started looking into AA, and I found an AA group in Vancouver at the Aboriginal Friendship Center. And that was my first time attending. I went with my best friend, who's also sober. And at first I was like, whoa, I don't know if this is for me. I have a hard time asking for help. I grew up just in such a crappy environment that I learned to just depend on myself. So AA was like, it meant being vulnerable. And then when they asked me to stand up and share, I just stood up and cried. So I went to a few meetings, and it just felt nice to be surrounded by people who understood me and didn't judge me. And after hearing other people's stories, I was like, okay, maybe I'm not that screwed up.
Yeah.
AA helped, but then COVID hit. So the meeting stopped. So I had to figure something else out. So I turned to therapy, which was new to me. I had always been too independent to reach out for help. So I found a therapist and I just unloaded on her. I talked to her about my childhood. I talked to her about my ex-husband. I had been married before. I got married when I was 24 in 2011, I think it was. And that lasted about 6 years. And from the get-go, it was a very abusive relationship. Drugs, alcohol, abuse, sexual abuse especially. So when I finally found the strength to walk away from my ex-husband, I turned to drinking even more. And so I left him in 2016. And I left the town of Squamish, where I grew up, with my foster parents just to get away from him. It was so ugly. The police were involved, had a no contact order. Yeah, it was pretty rough. So therapy was like, wow, I wish I had not been so stubborn and just opened up to someone a lot sooner. Mm-hmm. I would have saved myself a lot of, I don't know. I mean, the lessons I've been through have got me to where I am today, so I don't regret my decisions. But there's definitely easier ways to learn. Mm-hmm. I started going to therapy. I started to seek out my culture because I had grown up in a white religious foster home, nowhere near my community. My home community of Port Hardy is like a ferry ride and a 5-hour drive away. I didn't really grow up with smudging or bathing in the river or the big house and potlatching and the food and the language, basically everything that helps ground us and helps us remember who we are and where we come from. Mm-hmm. was taken from me when I was taken from my mom. That was what was lacking in me. So when I turned to therapy, I found my therapist in a clinic, which is a First Nations health clinic, and they had a lot of resources. They had elders. They had a program. I forget the name. I think it was like Calling Back Our Spirit, where we met weekly to talk with elders and share in a healing circle and just do different cultural events. And all this was very healing for me. I grew up almost resenting the fact that I was Indigenous, because I grew up in the rich part of Squamish, and the school was predominantly white, rich kids. So they were very racist. So any like jewelry that my biological family would send me, or like a medicine bag, or anything that represented my culture, I would hide or I would throw away. Mm. Just because I didn't want to associate myself with that in fear of being bullied even more. I had a lot of stuff I had to unpack. In the end, the therapy helped, and my grandma was like the biggest rock in my life. All throughout foster care, this is my biological mom's mother, so my maternal grandmother. Mm-hmm. She remained in contact with us. She would write us. She would visit us. She would send us parcels of goodies, and she just made sure that we still felt included and still remembered who we are. So as I got older, I really leaned on her because she used to be a drug and alcohol counselor in Tofino, British Columbia, at a place called Kakawis. And so everyone called her Badass Mabel because she had been there and she had done that. And so she was like the old lady who was just so cool, and she had been sober for years. And same with my grandpa. They had both been sober. So I had people to lean on. Unfortunately, I lost both my grandparents in 2020, my grandpa in May, and then shortly after in July, I lost my grandma. Mm. My grandpa had dementia and was deteriorating over the years, so we were prepared for that. And then my grandma had gone in for surgery after being in the hospital for a year and just didn't wake up. So that was hard. Mm. It was probably the closest I came to falling off sobriety. I haven't really been tempted to drink aside from when my family started passing away. And so I just heavily leaned on my sober friends and my community and my culture. That year, 2020, was rough. It started with my grandparents, and then I lost two cousins that summer. And then in the fall, I lost my stepmom. Mm-hmm. So it was like one after another of loss. And at the same time, my community is losing all our elders. And it was so heavy. Mm-hmm. And then the following year in 2021, I lost my aunt who had stepped into the role of my mother. She called me her daughter. I called her mom. That was hard again. And then I lost my dog.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that I had had for like 13 years. So just so much loss. And I managed to stay sober throughout all of it somehow.
Wow.
I found out that my home community in Port Hardy was going to build our big house. I don't know if you're familiar with the big house or the long house, but where we practice our cultural ceremonies. Coming of age ceremony, potlatching, 10 moon ceremony, it all happens within the big house. And our people, we were forcibly relocated from Blunden Harbor in the 60s by the federal government. They burnt our villages down, put us on boats, and sent us over to Port Hardy, stating that we needed to be closer to resources. But really, they just wanted to disconnect us from who we are. And it worked, unfortunately. My community has had a rough go since that we lost that connection to our land. We started losing our culture. Residential school happened at the same time. People were turning to drugs and alcohol. So we weren't practicing our ceremonies. Potlatching was at one point illegal, so we were going underground. So the federal government had been promising us a big house since they burned it down in the 60s. Well, here I am today, finally building our big house back in my community with federal funding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
When I heard that the ground was breaking on this project, I like prayed so hard. I was like, please allow my education and my career to align with this job, because I would love nothing more than to give back to my community in a way that I can use my skills, and it would just mean so much to me, like spiritually, to be involved with something that has such a huge impact on our people. And sure enough, I got my red seal and I went and looked online, and the contractor for that project was looking for a red seal carpenter.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, thank God. It's happening. So last April, so 3 months ago, I made the big jump from New Westminster, British Columbia, to Port Hardy, British Columbia. So from the city to my home community that I visited as a child to see my grandparents but never lived there. I think Port Hardy has about 4,400 people, so it's very small. And now I'm living in this tiny town. Unfortunately, all my immediate family, my mom, her parents have all passed away, but I do have extended family. So my extended family has welcomed me home, arms wide open. They understand, like, I'm in my 30s and I don't know my language and I don't know the land and I don't know my family tree. I don't know much. So they understand that, and they've just opened their hearts and their homes, and it's sort of my big journey back to myself. So yeah, I'm home, and I'm getting to know my family. I'm building the big house. In the past, working for the union has been a lot of like commercial concrete forming in carpentry. This job is more stick framing with wood, and we'll be standing totem poles, and we'll be using logs that were barged in from Blunden Harbor, our homelands, for the roof. And so I'll be learning a lot of new skills. Mm. And meanwhile, building something that just means so much to me and my people. It's been a long time coming, and every morning when I show up on site, I'm just like so thankful to be there, and it just makes work so much easier when you show up and you're just so passionate about what you're doing and knowing that the end result is going to bring so much healing to the people.
Man. Barbara, what would you say to somebody who is currently struggling?
So what I've learned is, like, we can't keep running. If it hurts, it's trying to tell you something. If you're struggling, there's always someone there to listen. But don't be afraid to reach out. There's AA meetings everywhere, if that helps, or turn to your elders. My elders have been huge since I lost my grandparents. Like, they're so calm, and they've been through it all, and they're just so wise, and we're people that tell stories. So if you can just hang out with an elder and listen to their stories, it's so healing. Just don't feel like you're alone, because even in the darkest, hardest times, when you're thinking about suicide or drugs or alcohol or whatever your vice is, like, it does get better. It can get better. Like, for me, it's faith. I will turn to Creator. I will pray about it. Find what works for you and pursue it. And I honestly pray that everyone has the strength to be able to turn their lives around.
Barbara, thank you so much for having the courage to come on and share your amazing story on this show. So thank you.
Thanks for reaching out.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person who is walking with us on this healing journey. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.